This program is a production of the Reformed Forum, online at reformedforum.org. This is Christ the Center, episode number 73. Today we discuss apologetics and pastoral ministry with David Robertson. This episode is brought to you by the Confessional Presbyterian, a journal for discussion of Presbyterian doctrine and practice, online at cpjournal.com. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. To read more about how you can help, please visit reformedforum.org/support. Welcome to Christ the Center, Doctrine for Life, your weekly conversation of Reformed theology. My name is Camden Busey, and today we're going to listen to an interview that Nick Batzig recorded at the recent Twin Lakes Fellowship. He sat down with David Robertson, who's pastor of St. Peter's Free Church in Dundee, Scotland, to talk about two of his recent books, the first being The Dawkins Letters, Challenging Atheist Myths, and the second being Awakening, The Life and Ministry of Robert Murray McShane. We hope that you'll enjoy this interview that we've recorded, so stay tuned.
This is Nick Batzig at Twin Lakes Fellowship near Jackson, Mississippi, and I am sitting here with Reverend David Robertson, who is pastor of St. Peter's Free Church in Dundee, Scotland. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, just about recovering from jet lag.
Yes, I actually took a trip to Scotland 2 weeks ago, and I know what that's like. We are interested to talk with you about two of your books and a little bit about your ministry there at St. Peter's. Just as background for our listeners, could you tell them just very briefly a little history about St. Peter's Free Church?
Sure. It's the building of Robert Murray McShane. I'm sure a lot of your listeners will have heard of him. He is the Protestant saint cited by charismatics and Calvinists alike. I minister in his church. Went there in 1992 when it was about to be closed down, and have been there ever since.
What was the state of the church like when you received the call? What did you say? It was 16 years ago?
Yeah, 1992, and when we went there, there were seven people in a building that will see 1,100, and four of them actually left not long after we went there. So,
and some of our listeners will not know that Reverend Robertson had shared some of this and much more at the lecture he gave this year on emergent Calvinism here at Twin Lakes. That audio will be available, and we'll give you updates on when that comes out so you can learn more about that. Now, many of you will know his name, I'm sure, from a book he published, was it 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah, the Dawkins Letters, when it came out, 2007.
2007, yeah. The Dawkins Letters. I first heard about David when I was an intern at 10th Presbyterian, and I had been witnessing to a neighbor, an artist that I had met there in Philadelphia in the city, and he had asked me, knowing I was a Christian, to debate or to read through Dawkins' God Delusion with him. He didn't want me to witness to him directly, but he wanted me to read through God Delusion and debunk it point by point. It actually was a great blessing, because after each session, he would say, you know, I didn't want you to witness to me. I just wanted to go through this book. And here you turn every session into an opportunity to tell me about Jesus.
Yeah.
Phil Ryken had given me David's book, and I'd read several of those letters and found them very interesting. One thing I wanted to say, Dawkins in his book talks about John Lennon, imagine there's no heaven. Yeah. It's easy if you try. No hell below you, above you only sky. And I used to always say to people, well, you have to imagine because there is. Yeah. You have to imagine that it's not because there is. He's denying reality. And what did you say in your book? I thought this was very clever. Do you remember?
That basically, it was the ultimate hypocrisy. Now, after I wrote the book, I came across a report in a British newspaper, which was quite funny because it had Lennon had been asked about, he was having some trouble with his tax, and he was speaking to his accountants and lawyers, and he was getting really, really angry with them about money that he was losing. And one of them quoted to him, it's only money, and quoted Imagine, and Lennon shouted at him. That was just a song, which is quite funny because, you know, school choirs will sing it, and it's a kind of anthem for secularists and so on. But it was just a song. I mean, I loved Lennon. I was a Beatles fanatic.
Yeah, me too.
But he was my hero. I mean, he went through a phase of evangelical conversion. Mm. I don't think it lasted very, very long. But I found it fascinating, this juxtaposition where he was trying to find things out. We had an interesting story. Lennon was in a car accident in a village near a village where I became minister. The minister before me was a man called David Patterson. And David Patterson went to the local hospital where Lenin was being kept and went in to visit him. And the staff weren't going to let him in. He said, no, I'm going to go and see him. And he went in to see him. And he sat and he told Lenin that he was going to hell. You know, David was very, very blunt. People were horrified. Lenin loved him. In fact, Lenin actually asked him to marry Yoko Ono and himself, and Patterson refused because he considered it adultery. And I just keep thinking, if Lenin hadn't been fed the garbage of liberal Christianity, who knows what could have happened?
And now this is a good background for why you even wrote that book.
Yeah.
And for those of you that don't know, David has been actively engaged in speaking throughout the UK and Europe, I believe, at different venues, debating Dawkins supporters, contradicting Dawkins' philosophy, defending the gospel, actively engaged in apologetic evangelism. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us how that came about? How did you get involved in that? How did the Lord open the door for that opportunity?
Well, there's kind of two things I think are relevant here. When I was a student in Edinburgh University between 1979 and 1983, I was very involved in student politics and did a great deal of debating. At the very last moment, I was about to become elected president of Edinburgh University, and because of my Christianity and a particular smear campaign, it fell through literally on the last night. And I was very disappointed, thinking, why did God let me go through all that and so on? I ended up becoming a minister instead. Instead of prime minister, I ended up becoming minister of religion. Mm-hmm. And when the Dawkins book came out, I'd done a little bit of kind of cafe evangelism and things like that, a couple of debates on the Da Vinci Code, for example. And I read Dawkins' God Delusion. I wrote a letter, an open letter on the Free Church website to him. Amazingly, it was published on his website. I just did not know it was published on his website until I started getting all these emails from atheists. And I was so impressed that all these atheists were reading the Free Church website, a bit as if you were getting lots of atheists who are listening to Christ the King, you know.
Right.
You'd be pretty impressed.
I think we actually get one or two.
Do you? Well, hi, atheists. You know, very welcome.
Might with you, too.
Know the truth, and the truth will set you free. That's what I say to my atheist friends. But what astounded me was that although some of the responses were intelligent, articulate, and respectful, a significant number, if not the majority, were utterly contemptuous and emotional. That's a bad thing to do with me. I just thought, nah, you guys are not. So I started responding to them. I kept writing letters. I wrote a second letter to Dawkins, which this time he did not let on his website at all. I got banned. I got banned 6 times from his website. Ironically, I got banned because my views caused arguments, which I just thought was hilarious for a site that was dedicated to clear thinking and tolerance. Christian Focus picked up on it and published them as the book, The Dawkins Letters. I wrote these for, I would say, relatively intelligent non-Christians who, I saw it like your friend, as an opportunity to present the gospel. Mm-hmm. Dawkins is one of the worst atheist writers. There are others, Michael Onfray, for example, French, is much better case.
Yeah, yeah.
The God Delusion doesn't present a single new argument. And churches started asking me to come and speak at events and so on. And I refused, generally, because I said, I will speak at an event if you do it in a secular venue, in a Borders bookstore, Starbucks, Costa's, something like that. Mm-hmm. You involve other Christians, and I speak for 20 minutes, 30 minutes perhaps, and we have an hour of questions and discussion. I've done that all over the UK. Borders in Scotland told me it was their most successful book tour, where they were expecting 15, 20 people. We were getting 150. I've done a couple of stuff in the States. In fact, I may be doing something in Jackson later this week. I've debated at universities, done a lot of, you know, those kind of things.
How large were the crowds generally, on average?
Well, it varies, but in most of the Borders stores, over 100, which for us in a secular venue was
huge.
It's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, and it wasn't renting a crowd from the church. I mean, one of the classics was in Birmingham in England. Around Christmas time, we went down and 3 churches had invited me. We went to the Bullring, which is the big shopping centre in the middle of Birmingham. And the manageress said to me, I looked and she'd set out 15 chairs. I said, you can't do that. I said, there's going to be, I think there's going to be more than 15. And she looked at me as though I was mad. And I said, I know, you're thinking, who do you think you are? You know, J.K. Rowling or something. And she said, yeah, really, that is what I'm thinking. We had the England rugby captain here last week. He had 40 people. We had Nigella Lawson, cookery book writer, our best-selling author, this Christmas. She had 50 people.
Yeah.
And I said, I finished the sentence for her. I said, and I'm an unknown Scottish Presbyterian minister. So you're thinking 15 is pretty generous. Well, when we got to 150, she called in security. There had people sitting all over the place. And she spoke to me afterwards and she said, that was the most amazing thing I've seen. And she said, you know, when I got over the shock of all the people, I thought, okay, this is just rent a crowd from the church. And I said, well, you know, you're quite perceptive. It probably was. Probably 60% of the people, 70% of the people were people connected with church. And she said, yeah, but every question you got was hostile. Every question was hostile. And it was fantastic. It was just brilliant. You know, I mean, if you've been involved in Presbyterian church politics, you can handle hostility.
Yes. So, they train us well.
They train us well. So, I mean, though sometimes secularists are more honest. But,
you know.
Inconsistent. Yeah, well, I don't know. But, I mean, it varies considerably, but it's the interest that's been fantastic and the opportunity to present the gospel to people who would never go near a church. Mm. That's been the main thing.
Now, I got an email I was telling you about yesterday, a newsletter. Phil Reichen had put me on your mailing list and get your updates. And I guess I think I was still in Philly. It must have been about 7 or 8 months ago, and I read through one of the newsletters, and here a man had been converted. I think Phil had actually mentioned this in a staff meeting, that an atheist who had posted on Dawkins' site, or one of these blogs, maybe you can tell us, he was actually converted. You thought it was a joke at first. Maybe you were very cautious, but then it was evident this man had been born again. His life had been transformed. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the fruit of your ministry in that sphere?
Well, this particular gentleman is very interesting. It was very encouraging to me because he he just wrote me last week, his first Easter as a Christian. He's a man called Richard, who was a frequent blogger stroke writer on the Dawkins website. He's a musician. He even wrote two pieces of music against me. One he called The Wee Flea. And, you know, it had this kind of heavy, ponderous beat. Because he had pictured me as this heavy Scottish minister plodding along. And actually, part of his conversion was to do with that piece of music. Because in the middle of it, he had a kind of bit that he went, a kind of wee joyous bit. And fellow atheists actually wrote to him and said, what are you doing? You can't have Robertson being joyful. He's an idiot. He's a fool. He's a, you know. And Richard reacted a bit and thought, whoa, it's a bit over the top. Anyway, I was speaking at a conference in Spain, and I got a phone call saying, you better go on the Free Church website. And I went on, and what had happened was all Richard's posts had been deleted from the Dawkins website. Now, he deleted them.
Right.
And you're talking about hundreds of posts, many of them against me. Mm-hmm. And there was a post on the Free Church website from him saying, my name's Richard, I post on the Dawkins website, I'm a lonely atheist. Is there anything you can do to help me? So I responded to him and said, because I wasn't sure whether this was a wind-up or not, I said, do you want to do this in public or in private? And he wrote back and said, I want to do it in public since we've started. I said, okay, I have two questions for you. Number one is, why don't you believe? And number two is, what would cause you to believe? I didn't hear anything. And he told me until 4 days later, I got this extraordinary posting on the Free Church website announcing his conversion.
Yeah.
And what had happened was, he told me the story later, was that he had become very disturbed because on one of the threads on the Dawkins website had been about a Russian cult leader who'd attempted suicide and failed. And people were writing in remarks, oh, you should have succeeded, the idiot, and so on. And Richard had written, guys, I don't think even the wee flea David Robertson would write stuff like this. And a doctor had written in, sort of LOL, and people had written in criticizing him for defending me. And he just thought, what am I part of? What is this? So he lives in the south of France, and he had kept all my posts. Now, I had written massive posts in response to the hundreds of points that had gone through each one, the insults I'd tended to ignore, except when they were just so funny that I had to respond with a bit of irony. And he read through, he printed out, he told me that he printed out every single one of my posts. Wow. He read through them all, had a cup of coffee in his balcony in the south of France. Basically read through them all. And he said, what got me was not the words of David Robertson, but was the word of God. Praise and especially God. The phrase, we love him because he first loved us. Oh, and he says, when I got that, my whole universe exploded.
Wow.
And he said, it really was that. It was my universe exploded. And he wrote a testimony. And his testimony is available. In fact, it's available on the Free Church website, my website as well. And what he said was just simply this. He said, I moved from a two-tone black and white world into a multicolor technical world. Mm. I thought, what a fantastic description of conversion.
Yeah.
You know, and when atheists argue with me, every now and then Richard will come on site and say, hey guys, I've been there, I know all the arguments.
Yeah.
No way. Yeah. No way. So, I mean, he was the most spectacular and in a sense, the most encouraging.
Yeah.
But to be honest, there are dozens of people, there are hundreds of people who've written, but there are dozens of non-Christians, atheists, agnostics and others, liberal Christians, backslidden people who've written and said, you know, they've been provoked into thinking about their faith again,
yeah,
or finding faith or, yeah, so.
And why not? I mean, if you think about it, every unbeliever is an atheist at heart.
Yeah.
They may not have the intellectual ammunition,
yeah. Yeah.
And they may not be, their consciences may not be seared in the same way,
yeah,
but you know, this is an encouragement to us to be evangelizing, to be taking the gospel out, to be learning and understanding. I really want to encourage our listeners to get a copy of this book. When I was in Scotland, I walked by Borders, and Dawkins' newest book was,
yeah,
right there,
yeah,
front and center,
yeah,
in the window. And I thought, you know, I thought about you,
yeah,
even though I didn't know you then,
yeah,
because I knew about this ministry. And I thought about you, and I thought, you know, this is what people are reading. And it,
yeah,
it's there in the UK, and it comes to the US. And yeah.
But listen, in the US, I've got to say something. I mean, because this may upset some of your listeners. I don't know. You know, 14% of people claim to be atheist in the US. I mean, that's a huge number of people.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people say, well, you could never be elected president if you said you were an atheist. I don't care, because in biblical terms, the vast majority of people in the US live as functional atheists.
Oh, yeah, they're practical atheists.
They are.
The fool has said in his heart, there's
they may say, heart. They may say I'm an agnostic. That's a meaningless phrase for most people.
Yeah.
It's a cop-out.
You're either for, yeah, Christ or you're,
yeah,
against him.
So the kind of cultural religion of most Americans is just idolatry.
Mm.
And it's as bad as atheism. And to me, the big thing that Dawkins has done, which is a tremendous thing, is given people like me, but not just people. I wrote the book so that Christians could give it to their non-Christian friends. Again, in one town in England where I was speaking, the person I was with going to lift back, we're waiting at a train station, and he saw someone sitting reading The God Delusion. And he'd obviously listened to the talk, because he went up and sat beside him and said, excuse me, he said, I see what you're reading. He said, would you like to read the other side of it? Mm-hmm. And of course, in our culture, that's what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to, what I say to people is, a million people in Britain have read The God Delusion. That's a million people you can give the gospel to through the Dawkins letters. I'm not interested in refuting Dawkins.
Right.
From a Christian perspective. If you can't refute Dawkins from a Christian perspective as a Christian, you're not much of a Christian.
You don't know the faith.
Yeah. Yeah. But what I'm interested in is, here's a great opportunity to communicate the gospel to people.
Right.
So I think that applies here.
Yeah, I think you're right. And especially in the bigger cities, a lot of our listeners are in Philadelphia,
yeah,
and more major cities. And you know, I saw it. I saw it in Philadelphia in my living room. I saw postmodernism.
Yeah.
I saw everything that I heard about in seminary.
Yeah.
Flushed out in the lives of individuals. This was not classroom. It was not for me. So much had been theoretical. I'd done a lot of evangelism in New Jersey, but really in the cities in America too. So this would be a great book to get. We also want to talk briefly with David about another book he's written, and that is called Awakenings in the Life of Robert Murray McShane. Can you talk to us a little bit about, I mean, obviously you wrote the book because of the history of the church you're at and the greatness of McShane.
Well, I wrote the book because of Nirvana, really.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
I actually, well, in a strange kind of way, I got so fed up of McShane people coming to visit McShane's church. And, you know, it was at a Protestant shrine.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I'm a historian by training, so I just thought, I've got to investigate this guy a bit more. I mean, I knew the kind of hagiography stuff. So I started doing some research, did some PhD work on McShane. And I was just so impressed. And he has so much to teach us about outreach, church planting, and things like that. And I wrote a book, but I wrote a modern biography of his life because all the other biographies were very old. I didn't intend to replace Bonar's Memoir and Remains of Robert Murray McShane because that was a memoir of his best friend, and it's a spiritual devotional classic. But I did want to write a modern biography. I ended up writing it for people who don't read history. So instead of what they call B-format, 10 chapters of 5,000 words each, I wrote 20 chapters of 2,500 words each with questions afterwards. I tried to provoke people into thinking how McShane applied for today. The title is quite interesting because, you know, you call it The Life and Ministry of McShane, so what? And I sit around the dinner table and I ask my family, any ideas for a title for the McShane book? And my son, who was into heavy metal at the time and stuff, was a real rocker, said, yeah, Awakening. I said, what a brilliant idea. That's one of McShane's favorite words. That's what happened in Awakening.
That's great.
It was revival. I said, what made you think of that? He says, oh, he says, just sounds like a good horror movie.
That's funny.
That's funny. Out of the mouths of babes. So anyway, who knows? Right. Or rebellious teenagers, whatever. Right. You know, we ended up, I did that. And very, very interesting.
Anything new you found in your research that surprised you?
Yeah, the big thing was, I mean, obviously to find that McShane was human.
He wasn't sinless.
He suffered from depression. He had two breakdowns from depression, for what we now recognize as, in effect, nervous breakdowns. He had an eye for the women. I have his diaries and his notes of his pastoral visitation. And he describes in one of them, for example, Mary has such and such had lovely blue eyes or whatever, and a shapely form, you know, as he's doing his pastoral visitation. And at one point he says, so-and-so has Catholic eyes. Now, I have no idea what Catholic eyes are, but I just thought it was fantastic that it was great to get to know McShane as a human being. Yes, he was godly and holy in a really good kind of way.
And one of the things that we, most of us know, is just his care for people. You know, that famous account, and, you know, permit me some leeway if I get this wrong, but where he tells the man asks what the secret is to his ministry and the conversion of souls, and he tells him to cover his eyes and to weep for people. And perhaps I'm getting that a little bit wrong.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of legends of McShane, like the tears are still on his Bible and all this kind of stuff,
I've
heard
that.
Oh, yeah, I've got his Bible. So
he was a man that cared deeply.
But he cared deeply and passionately. And the reason for that is he became a Christian when his eldest brother died. And he said that there was no one to care for his soul. All the religious people, all the ministers, all the evangelicals, nobody cared for his soul. And he had this passionate concern for young people and children, for so many people. I mean, he died actually visiting his people. He caught disease, and that's how he died. I mean, he did have this extraordinary love for people, and it was a love that longed for them to know Jesus more than anything else, and that's shown through, you know.
And this has, you have tried to implement this by God's grace in the life of McShane's church, church that you pastor, to see that vision, that desire for the glory of God and the care for people in the life of the church. Could you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, we don't copy McShane, but I'll tell you this, there's an awful lot he did that is applicable today, and especially the main things. We had, when I went to St. Peter's, were seven people, as I said, four of them left. What do you do? What do you do in a building that seats 1,100 people, in a church that has traditional worship, that is so traditional, is weird, in the eyes of the world anyway? You don't have reformed people coming in. You know, I didn't think reformed people existed. And, you know, what do you do? I thought, I don't know what to do. I'm just going to teach the Bible. And I did. And I do. And people just started coming. Now we've got about 150, vast majority of whom You know, 90% are younger than me. Mm-hmm. People of all different backgrounds. People who are profoundly ignorant of the scriptures. Many. Others who are growing a great deal in depth and knowledge. And it's, I think, what we're finding, partly through my own apologetic work in terms of what I'd call apologetic evangelism, which is not the desire to defeat atheists in argument, but rather the desire to present Christ.
Mm. Amen.
We're just finding that so many people are becoming Christians or being encouraged or being enthused. And right now, it's very exciting for us. We are, our building, which was due to be sold, turned into a pub or something, is now being redeveloped. It's costing us about £1 million, which is what, $1.5 million. We're setting up a center for public Christianity so that the British media and the European media can come to us. Yeah. Instead of going to liberal Christians or the Catholics, as they do all the time, to ask for Christian comment. Mm. We're going to train people in apologetics and evangelism. We're doing creative stuff, arts and music, those kind of things as well. Because again, I rarely use the word reformed, but in the sense of understanding reformed to be biblical Christianity, we're better to have encouraged people in the arts and music by doing that. And we're not doing that as a kind of trendy thing. We're just doing it because that's one of the ways that our Christianity is reflected. Mm-hmm. You know, you just look at the Dutch art masters and things like that, you know.
And you mentioned in the talk earlier, you mentioned some of the people that come to your church,
yeah,
some of the spheres that they're yeah, operating in their lives,
yeah,
are taking place. And could you just tell our listeners about one or two of the women maybe that you mentioned?
Sure. We produced a DVD, and actually if any of your listeners are interested in it at all, you know, they can email me. That's not a problem. And we'll send them a copy. And it'll probably be put on our website as well. We're just, our website now it's, you know, the danger with church websites is you start them and they're always constantly under, but we update ours now every week. Mm-hmm. On the DVD that we've done, for example, it mentions there's a lady there who's a lecturer at an Islamic institute who started coming to the church, mm-hmm, and became a member with us. We had another lady who is a research scientist from Ireland, brought up in a very strong Catholic background, rejected all that. Mm. She's a lovely Christian now, converted through Christianity Explored, and particularly what got her was the teaching about sin, mm, which she said the Catholics didn't accept. And we just see a huge, a Japanese lady, the very first person I baptized was a Japanese lady who's now training to become a missionary to India, mm, which is just fantastic. There's just huge varieties. The most interesting thing is that I've mentioned all women, but right now we are getting more young men than we are young women, mm, which is very, very, very unusual.
Yeah.
In certainly in the UK.
Yeah.
To have a church where 50% are young men.
Yes.
And that's very encouraging. And when I go back from the States this time, I'll be out of my pulpit another Sunday, I'm afraid, because we're going to a wedding in Sweden of a young man who was with us for 7 years. And a Swedish man, and he's training to be a pastor in Sweden, mm, getting married. I'm just absolutely delighted for him. And again, delighted to see the gospel being spread in that way.
Mm-hmm. And then Alex Brown, who is an intern at,
yeah,
Independent Press, where I'm informally on staff.
Yeah.
Alex is, yeah, a good, gifted preacher, godly, yeah, guy, and is going to be ministering here in the States, Lord willing.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, there's another problem, you see, because, you know, you guys in the colonies, you know, we you know, I mean, I laugh
I'd
because...
I'd like to go to Scotland and minister,
well,
honestly.
Yeah, but you hear Americans who talk about, hey, we're sending missionaries all over the world. But you also take people from all over the world,
yeah,
too. And I mean,
the whole world is a mission field.
To be fair, Alex is a great guy. He's from my congregation. And another guy here is a minister in Mississippi.
David Strain.
He, yeah, came through my congregation as well. Or at least his wife did. And through her, he became a minister in the Free Church and then shifted over here. Mm. So it's we export people as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess I would say to the American churches, particularly if you're Presbyterian, and who wouldn't be? Scotland is like Jerusalem to Presbyterians, you know, because we are the, we were. That's not, it's a bit arrogant to say we were the home of Presbyterianism. But I suppose we are the motherland in that sense. I say that your mother is very, very sick and the doors should come back and help. And not just have this romantic,
yes,
Mel Gibson, starry-eyed Scotland, haggis, golf, whiskey mentality, the land of John Knox and Chalmers.
Yes.
We, right now, we are in chaos spiritually and culturally.
You know, I prayed when I was in Scotland. It was so evident everywhere I went,
yeah,
how godless, and I don't mean, you know, people running around ripping,
yeah,
people's heads off, but void of Christian influence, void of healthy churches. And I prayed almost every day. I prayed,
yeah,
God, send laborers to the harvest here, yeah, because, you know.
But we have fabulous opportunities now. For example, I did a wedding just before I came over. The couple who were there, the family, the 15, 16 people who were there, had no clue how to behave in a church service. Three generations removed from any form of Christianity.
Mm.
It was hilarious because you ask a rhetorical question as a preacher. I said to them, I'm going to say something to you. I'm going to talk to you from the Bible. I'm going to read a bit from the Bible before I marry you. And you ask a rhetorical question, people don't answer. These guys, I said, marriage is difficult. And this woman says, ah, it is, son. I said, what do you think makes it difficult? And they started answering me, and I'm starting talking to them. I mean, you talk about two-way communication.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
That's funny.
And we just, we have so many opportunities. And I do, you know, I would urge you and I would urge your listeners to pray for our Center for Public Christianity, because our aim is not to have sort of political Christianity campaigning, right, on particular issues. Christendom's gone.
Right.
I'm not surprised that non-Christians behave like non-Christians.
Right.
Okay? Christendom's gone. My concern is right now we need to get the gospel to people.
Yes.
And there are, because of postmodernism, because of the collapse of nominal Christianity as well, we have great opportunities.
We do.
I am preaching to people who are profoundly ignorant of the gospel. They are utterly astounded when they hear what it is.
You know, and in America, it's the same way.
Well, you're heading the same way.
We are heading there. You know, I lived in Greenville, South Carolina for 7 years, which we call the buckle of the Bible Belt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Of Christianity. And I worked in a restaurant. I waited tables while I put myself through seminary. And I worked with a girl who was 34 years old, who had lived in Greenville, South Carolina, her whole life.
Uh-huh.
And I had given her, finally, had witnessed to her several times. She knew I was a Christian, knew I was in seminary, had, you know, befriended her, gave her a Gospel of John.
Mm-hmm.
A couple days later, she comes back and she's read in John 1, and she has Elijah, Levites, John the Baptist underlined. She,
mm-hmm,
says, who are these? I don't know.
Yeah.
Doesn't know who John the Baptist is.
Yeah.
In the buckle,
yeah,
of the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
Now, if that's true in Greenville, South Carolina, of a 34-year-old woman,
yeah,
you know, this, and,
yeah,
and the world is ready. I think the world, the harvest is plentiful.
Yeah.
You know, the opportunities are there. We need,
yeah,
laborers.
The church needs to stop, and in the States, forgive me as a foreigner saying this, but you need to stop living under an illusion.
Mm.
And it's the illusion of a Christian America.
That's,
it's
right,
the illusion of Christianity here.
I think our listeners would agree.
I did a debate in Millsaps College in Jackson, Mississippi. Now, it was organized by the small group there of kind of RUF style. I don't think it was RUF. I was out of First Pres that the people organized it. Small group, 20 people. They hired a lecture theater. Turned it for the debate. We had to move it to the biggest lecture theater they could get. Even then, they turned away 200 people.
Mm.
And I debated with an atheist professor. There were students in Jackson. Now, Jackson say they're the buckle on the Bible Belt.
Right, but very similar to Greenville.
Huge numbers of those students did not know the gospel.
Yep.
And even the ones who thought they did,
yeah,
didn't know the gospel.
Yeah.
But what a fantastic opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think, forget all the kind of EE approach and things like that. I mean, it may work in Florida. It may work in people of an older generation. But right now, we in the UK and in Europe are starting from three paces back from that.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think that most people under 40 in the US, you're starting pretty well from three paces back, or maybe two paces back from that as well.
Yeah.
And rather than see that as a negative thing, I see as a fantastic thing.
Right. We have to understand our surroundings
yeah.
so that we can minister the word of yeah. God effectively and wisely.
Yeah. I mean, I find myself overwhelmed by the opportunities to present the gospel. Mm. And part of what I want to do is encourage Christians to get on with that.
You know, I want to encourage our listeners. We could go on yeah. forever. I could ask you yeah. 50 more questions. And I'd actually like to have you back on. I hope we can
yeah,
call
sure.
you
no problem.
Sometime
no problem.
And have you on Christ the Center again. There are a lot of other things I'd like to talk to you about. But as I listened to you at the talk today, and I've many times wanted to go to a Barnes & Noble mm-hmm. when the Green Bible came out mm-hmm. this last mm-hmm. year, which is the environmental Bible that mm-hmm. has everything... Mm-hmm. Environmentalist underlining green. I wonder if the flood is actually underlined in green, or the cursed fig tree yeah. is in green. But to go. Those of you that are pastors, take opportunities. Do what David did. Go to places where you can do talks on books very mm-hmm. Competently, lovingly, wanting people to know Jesus Christ. Seize those opportunities because they're there. Mm-hmm. They're there in this country. Pray for this ministry. Pray for this center that they're beginning. Pray for the Free Church in Scotland. Pray for the Church of Scotland. Pray for any gospel preaching churches in Scotland that God would send revival, that he would bless the gospel. If you don't have the Dawkins letters, and if you haven't gotten a copy of The Awakening in the Life of McShane, go out, get a copy, read those. I think you will benefit tremendously. And read Dawkins' books if you get a chance, because they are still making an impact here in America as well as in Scotland, as I saw walking by that bookstore. We thank you for listening to Crisis Center. We want to encourage you to look at our other websites, reformforum.org and feedingonchrist.com. And we hope that you'll tune in again to Christ the Center.